from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, on New Year's Eve, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor granted a temporary exemption to a group of nuns who said providing contraception under Obamacare would violate their religious rights. But the Justice Department on Friday said nonprofit groups like the nuns can easily exempt themselves from the requirement by signing a form that allows a third party to provide contraception. We'll discuss the nuns' lawsuit, which is one of dozens challenging the requirement that employer-issued insurance plans provide contraceptive coverage. That's next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The Affordable Care Act's new provisions went into effect on January 1st to include no-cost FDA-approved contraceptive services as part of preventive care. And on Friday, the Obama administration urged the Supreme Court to reject a lawsuit filed by a Roman Catholic order of nuns, the Little Sisters of the Poor, challenging many employers to provide health care coverage with birth control or face penalties under the new health care law. The Little Sisters of the Poor operate nursing homes for the poor in the United States and around the world. They unsuccessfully challenged the Obama administration rules in Denver Federal District Court and are now seeking an injunction to block enforcement of the rules while they pursue their case in the Court of Appeals. Dozens of lawsuits are challenging employer-backed insurance plans, which include contraception coverage. And in this morning's opening forum hour, we take up the nuns' lawsuit and the issue of Obamacare birth control provision. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Judy Waxman. She's Vice President of Health and Reproductive Rights with the National Women's Law Center. And welcome, Judy Waxman.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Robert Muse, who is co-founder and special counsel with the American Freedom Law Center. He's with us this morning from very cold and snowy Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome, Robert Muse.
Great to be with you.
Glad to have you. Let me begin, if I may, Judy Waxman, with you. I presume at this point that since the Solicitor General in his brief in the Justice Department has said that this group of nuns can opt for religious reasons out, there's no substantial burden on their rights to practice their religion.
That's correct. That would be our point of view. What is required of the nursing home administrators here is for them to sign a certificate that says they do not want to provide the service, and that's all they have to do. In this particular case, nothing is going to happen after that. Nobody, unfortunately, from our point of view, is even going to get any birth control. Presumably, the administrators have done this kind of, I don't know about certificate, but certainly they've told insurance companies in the past that they don't want to cover the service. So really, it's nothing new that now they say they won't do.
But Robert Muse, there is the likelihood of facing fines, and Mark Rienzi, the lawyer who's been pretty much representing Ron Munn, said they have to essentially deputize a third party to, I'm quoting him now, sin on their behalf.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing to be clear, and I represent Priest for Life, actually, in a similar lawsuit for challenging the mandate on behalf of non-exempt religious organizations, and we got an emergency injunction granted on our behalf from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. The reason why Little Sisters of the Poor had to go up to a single justice petition is because their emergency motion was denied in the Tenth Circuit. And there's some factual distinctions between Little Sisters of the Poor and, for example, Priest for Life. And Priest for Life is probably closer to the typical nonprofit religious organization that is not exempt from the mandate. Little Sisters of the Poor, their insurance is provided through a church plan. So, in fact, their church plan is exempt under the regulations from having to provide contraceptive services. And it's important to make this comparison because, for example, in Priest for Life, for them to provide this self-certification is the moral and factual equivalent of authorizing their insurer to provide contraceptive services to their plan participants and beneficiaries, because that self-certification triggers then the insurer's obligation to provide these services as well as notice of these services to Priest for Life's plan participants and beneficiaries.
As long as you're making that distinction, Robert Muse, let me just also add the fact that there are dozens of lawsuits, as I had indicated before, and some of them have been advanced by private corporation owners who say that essentially their beliefs are violated as opposed to nonprofit organizations.
That's right. In those cases, like Hobby Lobby, for example, the Supreme Court granted review. Those cases are about a year ahead of these because in the for-profit corporation cases, the mandate was going to apply to plan years that began after August 1 of 2012. The non-exempt religious organizations, the new regulations applying to them, this so-called accommodation that we've sort of been discussing here, wasn't promulgated till this past summer. And so that's why those cases have come to a head now, and they're working their way up through the appellate courts, and because that mandate and those provisions of those regulations, this so-called accommodation through the self-certification, will apply as of January 1, 2014, to organizations like Little Sisters of the Poor and to Priests for Life. So this there is a factual distinction between, for example, Priests for Life is a New York corporation. The state of New York had some requirements for contraceptive services, and in the past they could provide an exemption to Priests for Life, and they would submit a certification, and that would exempt them completely, including their plan participants and beneficiaries from being provided with contraceptive services. This self-certification is, as I stated, the moral and factual equivalent of authorizing their insurance company then to provide contraceptive services to Priests for Life's plan participants and beneficiaries. That is a moral cooperation with an illicit and immoral act that is contrary to Priests for Life's religious beliefs. And for not complying with that, they are faced with a Hobson's choice because the regulations do provide for a penalty. It is $100 per employee per day that they are not in compliance with this. And Priests for Life will not self-certify because it's against their religious beliefs, and so they'll be subject to penalties if it weren't for us getting an injunction, emergency injunction, from the D.C. Circuit Court on December 31.
Well, of course, so we should add here that
there is a distinction between this situation and the one that Ms. Waxman was.
No, I understand, and I appreciate your elucidating that distinction. We should mention, though, that the administration birth control requirements only apply if an employer offers a group health plan, and they aren't required to offer group health plans. But let me go back to you, Judy Waxman. Notwithstanding the kind of distinction we just heard, I mean, let's talk overall about what's at stake here. As far as you are concerned, I imagine, again, Judy Waxman is Vice President for Health and Reproductive Rights with the National Women's Law Center. A great deal is at stake for women.
Absolutely. I mean, let's go back to the law itself. I mean, the law requires a wide range of preventive services to be provided in health plans, as you say, when an employer opts to provide such a plan. Everything from blood pressure testing, osteoporosis testing, mammograms, pap smears, and gestational testing for diabetes during pregnancy, and also birth control. And the reason that birth control was included in the list is because it is crucially important to the health of women and their children. The Center for Disease Control in the year 2000 looked back at the century before and listed the establishment and creation of birth control as one of the century's top public health achievements. So this is why it's in the law, that as a preventive services that keeps women healthier, babies healthier, and babies spaced better so they're healthier, healthier families. It was deemed by the statute and regulation to be a requirement for all health plans. So that's where we start. Secondly, there was a question of to the administration of should every employer that decides to provide coverage provided, and they struck what they thought was a good balance. So if you are an actual church, you're exempted. If you are a for-profit business, you're not exempted. You cannot have an owner of a business putting his religious beliefs on all his employees. The middle ground is what we're talking about here. They created an accommodation where an entity that says, we don't want to do it, we are religiously affiliated, and so all they have to do is sign the form so the government knows who's who, And then what happens is they do not have to pay for, they do not have to contract for, they do not have to tell their employees, they do not have to do anything in order for the employees then to get the service. And we are, of course, talking about, oh, we're not exactly sure how many people are in these kind, you know, work for this type organization, but certainly they are hospitals, they are universities, they are nursing homes, they are other service providers, and we're talking about easily hundreds of thousands of people who would have their employers' beliefs imposed on them if they cannot go another route and get the service. And so this was this balance. If you're a church, you don't have to do it. If you're a for-profit group, you do. Some nonprofits will have to do it. But if you are an affiliated group with some religion and you don't want to do it, you don't have to.
Although there are those who argue that you're trying to impose with this religious views on employers who perhaps don't share those views. But I'm wondering also what you would say in response to Attorney Mark Renzi, who is with the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, who's representing Sisters of the Poor, who says the federal government's big and they have lots of ways to essentially get contraception to people if they believe it's urgently needed.
Well, and in fact, that's what this balance scheme does. The organization itself does not have to pay for it, does not have to contract for it. There is another route where, in fact, the federal government indirectly would be paying for it through the administrative body that's administering the plan. So, in fact, it is government paid for support, and it's another route. A recognition, this particular regulation is a recognition that religiously affiliated groups may not want to provide this accommodation. And I do want to say that many, many are using it. I mean, here in Washington, D.C., Georgetown is now providing for in its university and in its hospital. They are using the accommodation to say that, well, their employee, we're not doing anything for our employees or students, and we're just signing the piece of paper. So the fact that there are some that are objecting to it is just the point I want to make is that there's really this is not a universally held opinion by all religiously affiliated organizations.
And once
many
again,
are seeing it as a good balance.
Again, Judy Waxman with the National Women's Law Center and Robert Muse, Marcia Greenberger, who is also with the National Women's Law Center, says that some charities are trying to impose their religious views on employees who don't share them. She says that 98% of Catholic women at some point or another will use contraceptives. So whose religious freedom, is it the employer or the individual woman's religious freedom that's being broached here?
Right. And there's several things that Ms. Waxman said that I think are factually and legally incorrect, this being one of them. I'm glad you raised this particular point. What they're attempting to do, those who want to impose this mandate on private corporations, private organizations such as Priests for Life or Little Sisters of the Poor, is they want to turn the Constitution on its head, right? The government is not prohibiting any woman from purchasing birth control or, you know, any other contraceptive method that they want to seek out. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to turn the Bill of Rights on its head. Rather than being a restriction on the power of the government, which is what the Bill of Rights is designed for, as well as the right to free exercise of religion, is to protect the government from encroaching on private citizens. They want to turn around and use the Bill of Rights as a sword against private individuals, forcing the private individual, private organizations, contrary to their religious beliefs, to provide a service that they object to. Again, the government is not preventing anyone from getting contraceptive services. They're now forcing organizations such as Priests for Life and Little Sisters of the Poor to provide these services, and they do have to contract for the contraceptive services because the services are not provided unless, for example, Priests for Life has a health insurance plan. Because it's the beneficiaries, the plan participants and beneficiaries of Priests for Life's health insurance plan that will be getting these benefits precisely because Priests for Life purchased a health care plan, and it's precisely because of this mandate that's going to trigger the contraceptive services coverage. So it's you're turning the First Amendment and free exercise rights on its head. Nobody, the government if the government was preventing women from going out and purchase the contraceptive services, I'm certain that Ms. Waxman and others like her would file their lawsuits against the government for encroaching upon some liberty interest. But here they want the government to force private parties to provide a benefit to women, and that's just contrary to the way the law operates. And, by the way, if even for non-profit, non-exempt religious organizations, if they meet that 50-employee threshold and they don't have insurance, then they're going to be penalized for not having insurance. And, oh, by the way, if you have less than 50, if they object to providing this contraceptive service, whether directly or indirectly through their insurer, through this so-called accommodation, which is no accommodation whatsoever, it still makes them morally complicit, then the Hobson's choice they're faced with is dropping insurance coverage altogether. Precisely the opposite of what the supposed protection, Patient Protection Affordable Care Act is to do, is to provide more coverage. So because they have this ideological, bent on providing contraceptive services, you're going to be forcing employers out of the insurance market, providing less coverage. And, oh, by the way, this is not preventive services because pregnancy is not a disease, right? I know there are many who like to treat pregnancy like a disease. Contraception is a way of preventing it, and abortion is a way of treating it. But pregnancy is not a disease. This is not preventive services. This is organizations such as those that Ms. Waxman belongs to forcing their ideology on private employers and trying to use the government to do so.
All right, I want Ms. Waxman to respond, but first I want to mention this. Robert Muse, who's speaking, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center. I also want to give you, our listeners, an opportunity to join this conversation and to essentially express yourself. Our toll-free number is available to you, and you can call us now. That number is 866-733-6786, so feel free to voice your own opinion or to bring in any questions or comments you have. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. There are a number of other ways, of course, you can express yourself. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Again, on New Year's Eve, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor granted a temporary exemption to a group of nuns who said providing contraception under Obamacare would violate their religious rights. But the Justice Department on Friday said nonprofit groups like the nuns can easily exempt themselves from the requirement by simply signing a form that allows a third party to provide contraception. The nuns' lawsuit is one of dozens challenging the requirement that employer-issued insurance plans provide contraceptive coverage. And I should mention here that Judge Sotomayor can rule, actually, on the nuns' request or actually refer it to the other eight justices. But we do want to hear from you, so feel free to join us again. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Well, Judy Waxman.
I do have a couple comments. First of all, to say that this is my ideology I won't give it an adjective. It's certainly not my ideology at all. What is at stake here is the fact that almost all American women use contraception at some time in their lifetime. 99% of sexually active women, and you already stated the statistics are that 98% of Catholic women who are sexually active will use contraceptive sometime in their lifetime. This isn't an ideology. It is a medical situation where in order to have healthier children, I would posit, as did the Institute of Medicine, by the way, that wrote the report and recommendations on this service. The scientific belief is that nobody has to take contraception, but most of us do, and we do it for health reasons. So I wanted to state that from the start. Secondly, I would posit that I'm always interested when somebody that I'm talking about tells me I am factually and legally wrong.
Well, not only that, but Robert Muir said you've turned the Constitution on its head, or your group.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, he's a little overzealous there, I think. I would say that what the Constitution does is protect the individual's right to freedom of religion, and that's what we're talking about here, the individual's right to decide how to practice religion or not. and the individual should not have, the individual should not get to lose what everybody else in another organization can get simply because the religion of the employer imposes it upon them. So whether or not I'm turning it on in head or he
is
an open question. The other point I would like to make is what the law requires is that the only time it would be upheld in this balance that we have in the statute that protects this, in other words, the government cannot impose something on an organization, a religious organization, unless there is a compelling interest to do that. And I would say the compelling interest is getting women the health care they need. And the exception is unless it is a substantial burden on the organization. Well, signing a form, I don't see where signing a form saying I'm not going to pay, contract, talk about, do anything, I think that we will ultimately find that determined that is not a substantial burden on everything that Catholicism is about. Signing a piece of paper that says I'm against birth control, I don't want to provide it in my plans, does not seem to me to rise to the level.
All right, we're going to go back to Robert Muse because we're coming up on a break here. Robert Muse, please.
Right, and I mean, she just legally. I don't know what legal theory she based that last statement on. That that the religious employers somehow are imposing their religious beliefs upon individuals, so therefore the government steps in and tells the religious organization what their religious beliefs ought to be. And it's not just a question of signing a form. I mean, it'd be no different if you were forcing them to sign a form to renounce their religious beliefs. The fact is, the certification has a purpose and it has an effect. And the purpose is to promote what the government claims to be its stated objective of the mandate is to increase access to and utilization of contraceptive services, an objective that is contrary to the Catholic beliefs of most of these organizations. And so they object to doing that. It's not just a matter of signing a form, because we don't allow people to force to take oaths, and that's just a matter of uttering a few words. So the free exercise clause protects not only the right to act, but the right to believe. And here they are compelling an action that has the purpose and effect of forcing these private organizations, again, this is the government, forcing these private organizations to act contrary to their religious beliefs and giving them a Hobson's choice. If they fail to do so, that is a substantial burden under the law. And not one, and the courts almost uniformly have rejected the government's argument, the one that Ms. Waxman's making here, that there is a compelling interest that would justify this substantial burden. And, you know, these injunctions that have been granted all across the country at the district court level and at the circuit courts level, such as the one we got granted, our showing is a clear showing of substantial likelihood of succeeding on the merits. I am quite optimistic that we are ultimately going to succeed in these legal challenges.
On that note of your optimism, we are coming up on a break, and I want to again mention to our listeners that you have an opportunity to express yourself here, to bring forth any questions or comments. We welcome your involvement in the program. It's toll-free to join us by phone, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. Talking with Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, who's with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Judy Waxman, vice president for health and reproductive rights with the National Women's Law Center. She's with us from the nation's capital. You can be with us as well, so feel free to express yourself. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about essentially the Justice Department on Friday saying that nonprofit groups like the nuns who have filed a lawsuit, a nonprofit group, in fact, Little Sisters of the Poor, can indeed be exempt from requirement of signing a form that allows a third party to provide contraception. And their lawsuit is one of dozens that are challenging the requirement that employer-issued insurance plans provide contraceptive coverage. Talking with Robert Muse, who's co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Judy Waxman, who is with us from the nation's capital. She's vice president for health and reproductive rights with the National Women's Law Center. And let me go right to your calls. We begin, Daniel, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I get a little frustrated hearing this argument because I think Ms. Newman is barking up the wrong tree in terms of the right focus this should be.
I'm sorry, you mean Ms. Waxman, I believe. Her name
is Waxman. I'm sorry. I think when we try and focus on whether or not a woman's right to buy contraception is religious, we shift away from what we should really be talking about, which is whether or not the right of religion is absolute. And the argument Mr. News is making is one that strikes me as very similar to one that segregationists made in the 1960s, that integrating schools would violate their religious beliefs. We didn't accept it then, and I don't know why we would accept a similar line of thinking now.
Judy Waxman.
Yeah, well, I think I agree with the caller. I mean, that's why there's this sort of balance here in this situation, and, you know, it kind of be like a possible slippery slope. I think that's maybe what he was referring to. So, like, okay, this group doesn't think birth control should be covered, but, and in fact, I want to say the regulations say they don't have to do it, but, like, what's the next group going to say? Mental health, immunizations, my religion, I don't believe in this kind of health care or that kind of health care. So my employees can't get it, even though I may have to, all I have to do is sign a certificate and somebody else will take care of it. Does then the religion of me, the employer, whoever I may be, whatever I claim is my religious beliefs, that then is that okay to impose on employees?
Let me get a response, Robert Muse, from you to an email from a listener named Louise who says, the Catholic organizations are entitled to their beliefs, but they are doing business in a country in which almost everyone disagrees with their stand on contraception. Do they have the right to impose their beliefs on their employees, and don't their employees have a right to have the same health coverage as every other U.S. citizen?
Well, again, it goes to the question of, is the government imposing a mandate that burdens religious beliefs, in this case substantially burdens religious beliefs? And the answer to that question is yes. You don't have a veto power of the majority to then allow the government to impose mandates that violate fundamental religious beliefs. Again, nobody is preventing any woman or man from purchasing contraceptive services. And if the government was doing that, then you may have a valid claim against the government, because the Bill of Rights, and this goes to one of the fundamental issues, the Bill of Rights is a restriction on the power of government. It doesn't give private individuals the power to veto religious beliefs because you think a certain provision should be in your healthcare law, and so we are turning the First Amendment totally on its head, and it's not, we've been operating with the Free Exercise Clause, since our founding, and the courts have been able to work out cases where, religious beliefs have been violated and when they haven't been violated, in situations where the government might have a compelling interest to substantiate or justify the substantial burden, in other cases where they have not. So it is the law that is striking this balance. Just the government claiming that this is an accommodation, it does not make it so. And in fact, the courts have said time and again that neither they nor the government are the arbiters of scriptural interpretation. And so for Ms. Waxman or for the government or for anyone to say, well, this, self-certification satisfies your religious beliefs, does not make it so. You know, one of the primary cases on burden that was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, the Thomas case, this was a Jehovah's Witness who didn't want to work in an armament factory, and so he voluntarily quit his job, went to get unemployment benefits, and the state of Indiana said you can't have these unemployment benefits because you quit your job, and he said, look, well, you're now burdening my religious beliefs, and the Supreme Court upheld it. And now it's interesting, he didn't object to turning a wrench in a factory because he said he'd work it, even in a sheet metal factory that might eventually make metals used in tank turrets. He just wouldn't work in a factory that was more directly related to producing armaments that would be engaged in war because it violated his religious beliefs. And the Supreme Court said, look, it's not our position to decide how direct or indirect the involvement is in something that violates his religious beliefs. And again, they upheld his free exercise rights. And that was a case that was, decided back in the 80s. So there hasn't been this slippery slope. And, oh, by the way, there are numerous exemptions that they've granted, not just from this mandate, but from other provisions of the healthcare law as well. So there's hardly a compelling interest when you have all these other exemptions. They grant them to churches and religious orders. Why not grant them to nonprofit religious organizations such as Little Sisters of the Poor? in peaceful life.
Well, again, since you mentioned the First Amendment, and you also mentioned Jehovah's Witnesses, and I want to get more of our callers on here, but I'm looking at some emails that shed different lights on both of those things. Ted writes, the original intent of the First Amendment was to guarantee the superiority of secular government over religious organizations. Unfortunately, the interpretation of the Supreme Court has for a long time been just the opposite. Beth writes, so to be exempt on religious grounds, one has to be a nonprofit? Why shouldn't anyone who has serious, sincere religious beliefs be exempt from having to buy or provide birth control or even erectile dysfunction medication for unmarried men? Or in the case of a Jehovah's Witness, blood transfusions. You and I may not belong to these religions, but should we not support religious freedom as guaranteed by the Constitution? The Amish are protected against laws that violate their religious beliefs. And I want to bring another caller on. Rita, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. My comment is that I think it's nonsense to characterize birth control as, quote, healthy or for a woman's health, which is not true at all. If you talk to any medical professional, they restrict giving it at certain ages over 30 because it can affect your heart. And I also have read where children are born with transgendered both sexual organs, that they did research, and I guess in the first 12 weeks, I think, or maybe it was the first 12 days, but if there's too much estrogen, that is what they attribute that messing up the child's sexuality to. And the birth control pill is not even a natural thing. It's usually artificial estrogen that you're getting.
Well, Rita, I thank you for your comments. In fact, I want to go to another caller, Bianca, who has comments on the same topic, but maybe from a different perspective. Bianca, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to disagree with the last caller and the statement that birth control is not used for health reasons. Many women like myself who have endometriosis at times are prescribed the birth control pill to prevent some of the pain and some of, you know, the heavy, you know, menstrual cycle that goes along with that. And helped me a lot. I started at 16 years old. I'm 24 now. And it's helped me not miss as much school. At the time when I was prescribed it, I was missing a day out of school a month. And so I was truant, and it kind of helped me in the situation. So I'd just like to disagree that it's not prescribed for health reasons, because in my experience, and I'm sure with other women's experience, it has.
Well, thank you, Bianca, for your call. We'll let those two calls stand, and we'll go to another caller. Steve, that's you. Hi.
Hi there. Yes, I was just wondering how the government is treating the Christian Scientists and their belief in not providing medical services. Are they fully exempt?
Robert Muse, that's an interesting question. How would you opine on that?
Yeah, and quite frankly, I think there are, for example, even in the individual mandate, they have provided a complete exemption from the individual mandate for those who have religious objections to providing health insurance in general, which I think I'm not fully informed of all their beliefs, but I believe they do qualify. So the government, in terms of the individual mandate, which imposes the insurance requirement, as you know, that was up in the U.S. Supreme Court recently and upheld as a tax as opposed to under the Commerce Clause, so the government has exempted them under the provisions of the individual mandate. I don't know, for example, if the corporate mandate would apply to them, but they would have a similar, if they wanted to object to certain provisions, they certainly could raise the objections themselves, but as the individual mandate, they did in fact exclude them.
All right, I want to get more of your calls on. Also want to read some emails here. David writes, this is idiotic, the health care coverage doesn't mandate anyone to use birth control. It just gives the option for birth control. Last I checked, birth control is legal. The nuns are trying to deny someone their right under the law because of their religious beliefs. This is so wrong. And Emma says, why, oh, why is health insurance still tied to employment? Can either of your guests address this? This whole issue would be moot if we had insurance like they do in advanced countries. And in fact, here's Ben who says, shouldn't all medical services be the decision of a doctor and a patient, regardless of who is supplying insurance? It should be up to patients and their doctors, not employers or the government. And Kelly writes, sometimes contraceptive medicines are prescribed for medical conditions, not for the specific purpose of contraceptions. How will female employees of organizations that do not cover contraception receive coverage for contraceptive medications required for other medication conditions? And Karen emails the following. For 2.5 years in the 1980s, I worked for Catholic Charities, and birth control was covered under the employee health care plan without question or controversy. Considering all the family issues we dealt with, I believe the nuns I work with would have been pleased with my reproductive rights covered by our employer. Let me go to San Jose. Alexia, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. My issue is whose freedom is being interfered with. In my mind, the health insurance benefits that an employee receives is part of their compensation package. When I work for a company, I'm paid with cash wages, and I also receive health insurance benefits. And my employer doesn't have the right to tell me what I can and can't purchase with the dollars in my paycheck. When I go to the grocery store, for instance, if I work for an employer whose religion prohibits them from drinking alcohol, you know, they're not allowed to tell me that I can't use alcohol in my private life when I go to the grocery store. I don't see why they should have the right to tell me what I can purchase at the pharmacy using my health insurance benefits. I don't see why I should have to make those private decisions in my personal life according to my employer's religious beliefs.
I'd say it's a fair guess, Judy Waxman, that you would agree with this caller.
Yes.
You want to echo anything in terms of what she just said about individual rights as you see it?
Well, I think I kind of said that before, that, you know, it's the question is who has the freedom of religion here, and I might use this opportunity to say that when I have debates generally, I'm often confused when somebody tells me that what I actually just said, which Robert seems to be telling me what I said. So I just want to clarify that I'm not saying what anybody should believe, nor am I saying that the government is saying what anybody should believe. The test here will be whether or not signing this piece of paper is a substantial burden on the religion, and that will be the end of the story.
I wonder, though, if you, Judy Waxman, could answer a question which one of our listeners puts forward here. It says, a woman named Seenum wants to know, are Catholic nuns exempt from paying coverage for contraceptives by signing the paper or not?
Yes.
They are. Okay.
Absolutely.
And here's a listener named Dale who says, when Archbishop Cortolone was Bishop of Oakland, he admitted in the Diocesan newspaper that Catholic Charities East Bay already provides contraceptive coverage in accordance with California law. Note there were no protests from the Catholic Church when states adopted laws requiring contraceptive coverage, now going nationwide. This is all, Dale writes, hypocritical politics. And Bob tweets,
yes,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to add that in California in particular, there had been a law in place previous to this one that passed in the Affordable Care Act where health plans were required, are required, all insured plans are required to provide birth control in their plans. It did go to the state Supreme Court in California and was upheld.
And Robert Muse, a listener named Bob, writes on our website, I would sympathize more with Mr. Muse's argument if it weren't for the fact that employer health plans were not significantly subsidized by the government. Perhaps a better compromise would be that employers can choose to offer less than standard health plans in exchange for foregoing the subsidy. But as long as the government is helping pay for it, they get a say in what is provided.
Yeah, well, you know, this goes back to that fundamental question. I'm not sure if I've tried to chime in, but I think I was muted out here. You know, you don't have, there's no individual rights vis-a-vis a private company. That's one of the, you know, so many of your callers and your emails are presuming something that's just simply not true. You don't have a right to tell your employer that I need contraception and that's your religious liberty interest or whatever, you know, constitutional interest you want to have. You don't have constitutional rights vis-a-vis a private entity, a private employer, or a private corporation. In fact, if you don't want to work for a Catholic organization, you certainly don't have to work for a Catholic organization if you don't like the compensation or you don't like the benefits. The problem here is the government's now telling these private organizations what they can or they cannot do. You know, one of the fundamental problems with all of this is the very notion that our federal government, which is supposed to be a government of limited and enumerated powers, has the authority to begin with to start imposing these sort of mandates on our private companies. you have a right to vote with your feet. You don't like your employee, you don't like the compensation you're receiving, you don't like the health benefits you're receiving, then you go work for another employer. Nobody's forcing you to do that. But now if you're a religious employer, you can only be operating in the marketplace because the government is imposing upon you mandates that you have to subject your religious beliefs to.
Now, Robert
Muse,
I've got
the argument of individual rights is just absolutely wrong. It's fundamentally flawed that a private employer has an individual right, an individual constitutional right, vis-a-vis their private employer. It's just simply, flatly wrong.
I do have a tweet here that I'd like you to respond to, who says that in arguing the non-suit, you use individual and organization interchangeably, that that's perhaps reflective more of Citizens United decision.
No, well, there's the for-profit cases that have gone up, the Hobby Lobby and in the Conestoga Woods. One of the threshold issues that's going to be decided there is whether or not for-profit corporations, private corporations, have free exercise rights to begin with. That's not even an issue, as the government even concedes in these non-exempt religious employer cases, because non-profit religious organizations do have free exercise rights. And very interestingly, in the for-profit cases, there's several cases, one of them out of the D.C. Circuit, Gilardi, where they held that the corporation didn't have free exercise rights, but because it was a closely held S corporation, that the family, it was a family-run, family-owned business, that they had free exercise rights to determine what should or should not be in their company's health care plan. So this is probably a little bit more of a complicated issue just to say, you know, individuals versus the organizations. For the nonprofit religious organizations, plainly they have free exercise rights. For the for-profits, that's a question the Supreme Court's going to be deciding, and whether or not if it's a closely held S corporation, whether or not the owners of that company's free exercise rights can then be imputed to the corporation. So that's sort of a long and perhaps complicated way to respond to your question.
And I think the private corporations are on a faster track here as far as adjudication is concerned. But let me bring some more of our callers on here. And Isaac, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I first want to say that I am vehemently pro-choice, and I think the lady's doing a great job defending that side of the political spectrum. But I also like to say that I believe the real assault here is on the Affordable Care Act, that is being this contraception issue is just being used as a ploy to undermine Obamacare. And I wish the Obama administration had seen this coming, had created a strategy to thwart this rather pathetic effort to undermine this great act that should have a public option, by the way. And I would like to ask your guest taking the other position, would he support the Affordable Care Act if contraceptions were not funded?
That's a fair question, Robert Muse.
No, absolutely not. In fact, it goes to the point that I was just making previously, and I actually argued the case in the Sixth Circuit against the Solicitor General. I think this Affordable Care Act is a direct assault on the Constitution. Whether you know, nobody's saying, people should have health care. That's terrific. But is it the government's job of doing so? And should we give the government that much power when our Constitution is designed to create a federal government of limited enumerated powers? And the reason why it does that is because our Constitution is designed to do really two principal things: to prevent tyranny and to protect liberty. And when the government grows in leaps and bounds in power, and you got 40,000 new IRS agents and these other ways that they're getting involved in your private life, you're going to lose your private liberties, including in this case now the free exercise rights of private individuals. So do I oppose the Affordable Care Act as a matter of constitutional law and constitutional principle? Absolutely.
Well, I don't want to get into the debate because we've had it many times, but let me ask you, Judy Waxman, if you see this argument against contraception use as a larger argument against the Affordable Care Act.
I do. I mean, I was very interested in what the caller had to say, and as you know, the House of Representatives voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Oh, I lost track of how many times, around 40, I think. And
42 at last count, I believe.
42, thank you. You know, so it's like whatever angle we can come up with to throw a wrench in somehow, that's fine. And that is part of, let's just throw some spaghetti at the wall here to get at the Affordable Care Act, which I believe is part of the government's responsibility, as did obviously the Supreme Court in this case. So, you know, we could go off on that tangent. I'd rather not. But to bring it back to the issue at hand, I do want to say again that not all Catholic affiliated organizations agree with Robert. Many of them have seen the accommodation as a balance, a way to say, okay, you know, this isn't perfect maybe, but the fact is we don't have to pay for it. We don't have to contract for it. And that's fine with us.
All right. I want to bring another caller on. John, that's you. Thank you for waiting. Join us.
Yeah. There's another legal principle here of equity that I want to raise in a couple of different ways. So let me pose the questions. First of all, does the Hobby Lobby or any other business have a right to control their employees' personal life? I don't think so. They have a legitimate right to focus on job performance and judge people, but they have to judge people on the job with equity and fairness, and that is an issue here. I'd like to ask the male attorney how he would feel if his job said, his job requirements, or his employer said to him, okay, you must not care for your male reproductive organs and your health insurance, or alternatively, if his employer said, you can only do certain things with your male reproductive organs. And I'll take my question off the air.
Okay. It's a hypothetical, but how would you respond, Robert Muse?
Well, it's kind of a strange hypothetical. are we talking, I had a private employer who told me, I'm not even sure how he phrased his question, that would then raise a constitutional issue? It certainly does not. Would it be, would somebody perhaps telling me to do something privately that I found so morally reprehensive or offensive that I would leave the employer? Yes, I would. Would I have a constitutional claim? Now, if it's, some sex discrimination or Title VII claim or something else, that's a whole different area. But again, your listeners and most of these emails and they're just missing the entire point of what the Bill of Rights and what the free exercise right is all about. And that's one of the problems. You know, she mentioned about just throwing spaghetti on the wall. I got to tell you, there's virtually every single district court so far, and now all the circuit courts, and now even one single justice, have said that this, as Judy likes to pejoratively refer to it as just simply signing a certification, have held, at least preliminarily, that it violates the free exercise rights of the nonprofit, non-exempt religious organizations. The only outlier right now that I'm aware of is the Seventh Circuit denying the emergency injunction on behalf of Notre Dame, and that case has been extradited. So the vast majority of these cases across the landscape have been falling in the favor of the position that I've been arguing, in contra to the position that Judy has in fact been arguing. So I think this thing at the end of the day is going to be struck down. And just going to the Affordable Care Act, this mandate, these legal challenges will only affect the mandate. It's not going to affect the Affordable Care Act. So the argument that this is going to, take down the Affordable Care Act is just plainly wrong. And, oh, by the way, the Catholic bishops supported the Affordable Care Act, but they object to this mandate because it violates their religious belief. So, I mean, there's truth in there somewhere, and the fact remains is that this is a violation of the free exercise rights protected by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, as the vast majority of the courts have been holding preliminarily so far.
Now, let me go to another email from a listener named Henrik, who says, I'm in complete favor of the Affordable Care Act on this issue, but I have a question about that famous form the nuns organization refuses to pay. Usually people say all they have to do is to sign a form that they will not pay for coverage of contraception. But on the program, Michael Krasny phrased it differently. They have to sign a form allowing others to provide coverage for contraception. That seems much more likely to be objectionable to Catholic organizations. It could be taken to condone insurance payment for contraception, or perhaps condone use of contraception. So what exactly does this famous form say? Judy Waxman, to you.
Yeah, what it says is we don't want to provide it. And I think what the question, which again I'm going to assume that many of these organizations have at least said to their their insurers in the past. So that is nothing new. What is maybe a little confusing here is what happens next. And what happens next is the balance of this accommodation is that the actual employer's plan will not pay for, cover, or contract for any contraception, but the insurance company will have to figure out how to make sure that the women can get the coverage in a seamless way. So the objection seems to be here to, I'm signing this piece of paper, but when I do it, I know that the insurance company is then going to do it out of their own pocket. And so not only do I not want to do it, I don't want to let the insurance company take the money out of their own pocket and make sure that women can get this coverage. So that was the balance the administration tried to come to with this accommodation.
Well, we're also getting a lot of questions about other groups' reaction to the requirement. And Robert Muse, perhaps you can shed some light here. A listener asked, for example, whether Christian Scientist organizations have raised issues about providing health care in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I'm not familiar of any of the lawsuits brought by Christian Science organizations. You said I know they're exempt from the individual mandate, so they may not even be subject to the Affordable Care Act, so that's probably why it might not have arisen. Most of the organizations that are bringing these are Catholic, but not all of them. Hobby Lobby is not a Catholic organization. Some of the Protestants who don't object to contraception per se, like the Catholic organizations do, they have an objection to providing coverage for the drugs that operate as abortifacients. And so that's Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby didn't object to contraception simply, but just to the abortifacient provision of the mandate.
Well, I think we've had a good, vital, and healthy debate here, and I want to extend thanks to both of you for coming to the end of the program here. We'll obviously continue to follow this story. I want to thank Robert Muse, who's co-founder and senior counsel with the American Freedom Law Center, with us this morning from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Judy Waxman, vice president for health and reproductive rights with the National Women's Law Center. She joined us from Washington, D.C. I hope you'll join us for the hour up ahead. We're going to be talking about turning California possibly into six states, and also be talking with Leonardo DiCaprio. And remind you, of course, that Forum is with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. Our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. With online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.